In this podcast, we will be telling the story of the infamous Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program, otherwise known as DARE. Does that name ring a bell? It most likely does, because this widespread U.S. drug prevention program was created in the early 1980s to keep adolescents from doing drugs, and it quickly spread to 75% of U.S. school districts and 43 countries. For many Americans growing up in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, listening to a police officer lecture about the danger of doing drugs was a memorable part of their education. The unfortunate twist to this story is that the program largely failed to fulfill its goal of keeping kids from doing drugs. Soon after the program started spreading around the US, numerous scientific studies exposed the program for being largely ineffective. Yet astonishingly, the program kept growing and receiving funding for a very long time in many states. However, in the early 2000s, the government finally listened to the scientific evidence and began gradually defunding the program. In light of losing funding, DARE had to change its curriculum and implement evidence-based practices. In the late 2000s, they revamped their approach with the Keeping It Real curriculum. Despite the cheesy name, this updated curriculum has actually been shown to prevent drug use among kids. Hi, my name is Jonathan Che. In this podcast, you will hear the story of DARE, why the program failed its goal of preventing drug use, and what's actually been shown to make a drug prevention program successful. So to begin the story of DARE, we must first look at the political and social climate that created the need for a program like DARE to come about in the early 1980s. The war on drugs was declared by Richard Nixon in 1971, and what followed was a sensationalized campaign to reduce drug use in the US. The social climate in the US quickly became very anti-drug, as drugs became the scapegoat for many social problems, such as crime and violence. With so much buzz about how drug use and addiction will ruin lives, land people on the street or in jail, families and other institutions were becoming much more cautious about keeping adolescents from doing drugs. In the wake of this changing social climate, the need for an adolescent drug prevention program was clear and urgent. The roots of DARE go back to Los Angeles in 1983, as a collaboration between the Los Angeles Police Department and LA Public Schools. The story goes that Daryl Gates, the chief of LA police at the time, began noticing that the number of drug busts in LA schools was quickly increasing. Rather than to continue focusing on punishment, he had the idea of creating a preventative education program which would be led by police officers. The curriculum of DARE was adapted from research on drug prevention education that was being conducted at the University of Southern California at the time. It was then handed over to police officers, who began training in administering the program. The DARE curriculum is as follows. Once a week, police officers in full uniform would enter a classroom of students and lecture for about 45 minutes to an hour straight. Each lecture was about the lesson of the week. There were 17 lessons in the DARE curriculum, so the program lasted for 17 weeks or around 4 months. Examples of some lessons were Lesson 2, The Harmful Effects from Misuse of Drugs. Lesson 9, Media Influences, Discussion of Movies, Television, and Advertising Techniques. Lesson 14, Gang Pressures, Discussion of Gangs and the Consequences of Gang Activity. To summarize the program, police officers lectured students about various lessons with the intention of warning students about the dangers of using drugs and to promote the benefits of living a drug-free lifestyle. In 1983, DARE had only been offered to elementary schools, yet in 1984 they expanded to middle schools and in 1989 they began operating in high schools. The program was immediately thought to be successful and innovative, and it spread like wildfire all across the US during the years after its inception. This was partly because it received support from both sides of the political spectrum. According to the DARE website, the program had eventually spread to 75% of U.S. school districts. And beginning in 1988, U.S. presidents started to recognize National DARE Day, a practice that persisted until the Obama administration. Despite all the buzz, many scientific studies were being conducted on the effectiveness of the DARE program soon after it began operating, and they sadly all held the same results. Students who participated in the DARE program were no less likely to do drugs than students who didn't participate in the program. An extensive review conducted in 2004 by Stephen West and Carrie O'Neill looked at 11 large different studies all testing the efficacy of the DARE program. The review concluded with, "Our study supports previous findings indicating that DARE is ineffective." Ironically, there are also studies which show that DARE has been found to increase drug use. One study conducted in 2009 by Zilli Sloboda and colleagues found that participants of DARE were in fact more likely to use alcohol and tobacco than students not exposed to the program. This is known as the boomerang effect, and there are many theories as to why this happens. For one, if you tell someone not to do something because they might die or get harmed, it can make the person very curious to test that theory. Furthermore, as students get older, they get very curious about the mysterious drugs that they've discussed in depth and learned about from police officers, such as marijuana or psychedelics. And in regards to the increase in use of alcohol and tobacco, it may be that because DARE emphasizes the risks of severe drug abuse, they indirectly make substances like alcohol and tobacco seem not too scary. Alright, let's take a closer look at what really made this program unsuccessful. An insightful study conducted by Hansen and McNeil does a great job of revealing the fundamental flaws in the DARE curriculum. This study measured DARE's influence on 12 essential variables which strongly predict whether adolescents will use drugs or not. For example, they measured whether DARE improves kids' ability and skill to resist drugs, whether kids think using drugs are incongruent with their values, kids' beliefs about the consequences of drug use, perceived alternatives to drug use, decision and goal-making skills, stress management skills, etc. These are variables particularly targeted by drug prevention programs because they've been shown to be most effective in keeping adolescents from using drugs. Out of all of these 12 important variables, DARE only had a significant influence on one variable, a commitment to not use drugs. However, influencing just this variable alone was not enough to decrease levels of drug use in participants. This study exemplifies how the 17-lesson DARE curriculum, structured around lecturing adolescents for 45 to 60 minutes about the dangers of substances, only serves to instill a commitment to not use drugs, yet misses other essential targets, such as teaching refusal and decision-making skills. This fact makes clear why DARE often failed for many kids. Because a simple commitment to not use drugs is somewhat fragile and precarious when it is not supported by an intrinsic change in personal values or beliefs about the consequences of drug use. Later, we will go more in depth about what makes a drug prevention program succeed or fail. Yet for now, let's continue with the story of DARE. By 1991, there were over a dozen studies which exposed the ineffectiveness of the program, yet the program was still growing and receiving funding. This astonishing fact has led many to question why school districts were ignoring the evidence and continuing to offer and implement DARE. Sarah Berkland and colleagues interviewed 16 different schools to investigate this question. They found that school districts were aware of the research, with some never even expecting the program to reduce drug use to begin with, but chose to continue the program for its other benefits. The main reason is that schools thought DARE promoted connectedness between children and police officers and police and schools, really valuing the social component of DARE. Also, many people who ran the program had anecdotal information, which provided enough evidence of DARE success, and thought that the large-scale studies were not generalizable to their school districts. We will now transition to Lily Marshall with an interview of someone who experienced the program firsthand.
This is Lily speaking. I am a psychology student at Bard College.
Let me introduce Anya Swinkowski, a junior at the Bard Conservatory of Music. Anya is a clarinet player and psychology student. She went through the DARE program and lives to tell the tale.
Welcome to the podcast. How old were you when you went through the DARE program?
I think it started in fifth grade.
Was it required in your school? Why did you do it?
Everyone had to do it. And it was, it was a requirement to, like, I guess passing fifth grade and everyone... Like, we had a reward at the end, like, we all got to go to this fun picnic. together. So they did give us an incentive to do it, but I think like it was just part of our day.
Who led the program? What were they like?
I want to say that they were police officers, but I feel like there were other teachers involved. I don't quite remember who taught them, but I definitely know that the police officers were involved, and it almost seemed like the way they taught it was sort of robotic, and it was just like, learn to say no, everyone just say no, like practice saying no. There was just like a lot of emphasis on that rather than like conflict resolution and peer pressure situations. Like there were definitely like scenarios, but a lot of it was just like, their tagline was basically like how to say no to drugs.
Yeah, actually it's mainly cops who lead the sessions, since the parents, they trust that the cops know about, you know, the drugs and the dangers of them. So how often were the sessions for DARE?
I think they were like once a week on like a Friday. I don't know. I seem to remember that they were on a Friday, but yeah, it was, and I'm not sure if it was the same officer that came in every week or they like changed it up, but I do definitely remember that they were all white male police officers. Like, I don't think there was any other representation.
Was the program primarily lecture based, or were there any kind of interactive activities?
I think both. They definitely went at length talking about all we needed to cover, but we also had like interactive workbooks that we brought home, and like, but the thing was is that there really was only one correct answer for everything. Like there wasn't really open to a lot of conversation. It was just basically saying different ways to say no.
What was your parents' opinion of the program?
Actually, interesting you mention that, because initially when I talked to my mom about this a couple days ago when I said we were having this interview, she was like, oh yeah, no, it was great. You like stayed out of that whole thing in high school. It was good for you. Like I described it to her basically as the abstinence only equivalent of drug and substance education. She was like, if you put it that way, I feel like it was kind of bad because you refused to even take an Advil if you had a headache, like, because you were so against the idea of any drug, and you got mad at me as a fully grown adult for buying a bottle of wine. She's like, yeah, both you and your brother were, like, so adamant. And she's like, I feel like it actually cultivated this really negative and problematic relationship with these substances rather than understanding what, like, what they're good for and, like, what their appropriate use is rather than just, like, saying all drugs, all alcohol, cigarettes, everything's bad, like, it's terrible, we need to just stop doing it all together. It wasn't really context appropriate, it was only, like, the scenarios that you'd run into it at, like, a party if you were, like, in middle school or something. It was, like, all preparation for going into middle school, but, yeah, I think that was definitely, like, my impression of it, too. Like, I feel like I also kind of avoided situations where I thought there would ever be potentially any substance use at all, and like I feel like it may have been a good thing. I could have missed out on a lot of good friendships that I could have dealt with.
Was there anybody at your school who went through the program with you who ended up kind of, say, like rebelling against what they taught you about avoiding all drugs?
Yeah, I feel like that was a lot of people. I mean, once we hit eighth grade, it was sort of like, even seventh grade, there were a lot of people that went to parties or had parties, or there was a lot of, like, there was a lot of talk about it. I'm, like, not sure about how much it actually happened, how much it was just kind of, like, all talk, but I think that same with the sex education, like, the scare tactics obviously didn't seem to work.
Yeah, in your opinion, what do you think is wrong with an abstinence-only model? Like, what do you think is the flaws of that? How was it ineffective?
Well, I think that it, like I said before, it doesn't account for, like, appropriate context and moderation. Like, for example, I don't have any studies at hand, but I know that, like, I learned through peer health that, like, harm reduction education, similar to, like, with sex education, you know, using protection and everything, I think that that is giving a much more realistic framework that, hey, you're going to run into these things, and here's how you can be prepared for it. Like, don't mix these things. Don't mix these things. You can mix these things. It might not be okay to mix these things. And it's okay to have a drink when you're maybe this age, but please be aware that of the risk, you could get caught, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, they're way better off educated about it than dead at the worst, you know?
So would you say that Dare kind of cultivated an all or nothing approach to using drugs or alcohol?
Yeah, because it also changed the way I like looked at people who were involved with it too. Like, oh, they do drugs or they drink. Oh, they must be like a bad person. Like, I should stay away from them. Like, they're trouble. I also remember like reading over the shoulder of my friend's essay in fifth grade, and he just basically said, I will never let a drop of alcohol touch my mouth ever. Like, because we all had to write like a final essay. And then actually, I was FaceTiming a friend yesterday. We were talking about it, and she said she actually found her essay and she read it to me. And the last sentence was like, I will never do drugs. The end. And it's just like this sort of, I guess it's represented in the way people like wrote about it too. Like, that's what they told us how to think. And then you said that, and then you probably started to believe it too.
Wow, that's actually really surprising. So continuing to like the program itself, other than the just say no, what other methods of prevention were taught with DARE?
I think other than just like straight up confronting the person that is offering you whatever it is that's potentially harmful, we were taught to like, if we had like a cell phone, to like text our mom in the bathroom, like eagle or like pineapple, like a safe word, so they would like come and pick you up so they wouldn't have to hear you talking to your mom or like, but I think it was definitely like, if it wasn't no, it was like other avoidance tactics, like saying, like making up an excuse for you to leave if you did straight up say like, oh, I actually have to go, blah, 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 I have this thing coming up, or yeah, I texted my mom or whatever, she needs to pick me up for something and I'm just gonna leave now, or just maybe just straight up sneaking out. And then, like, after that, sort of, like, almost severing relationships, like, with the people that offered you these things, and maybe not attributing it to the fact that we're all, like, adolescents that are, like, thrill-seeking, and they may be not making a right decision, or they're just trying to experiment, and then it made you think that the person that was offering you this thing was, like, a bad person, and you needed to stay away from them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What do you think was the biggest takeaway that you had from DARE?
That it didn't work. Like, it was pretty obvious that by the time I got to middle school, I was even wondering if most of the people I went to school with actually had the DARE education, and it turns out everyone did. But like, I found that really hard to believe based on what either people were talking about doing or I heard about or what actually happened. I can't say that I would know how much in moderation they did these things or not, because I, again, didn't really associate with people.
Do you feel that you got any skills to refuse drugs in a situation where you were offered them? Like, real skills, not just no.
Come to think of it, like, I think there was one time I was at a party in my senior year that I wasn't, like, ready to drink alcohol yet. And I just said no, and it wasn't a big deal. And I guess that part of the education was good in terms of just being, like, firm with, like, your no. But it doesn't cover the whole picture of what you would be in a certain situation. Like let's say you wanted to do a little bit of this and, like, state what your limit is there. Like, maybe you'll have one edible or one cigarette or one drink, like, sort of things that are much more nuanced and maybe not necessarily appropriate to fifth grade. But I think the other thing was that it ended in fifth grade. The conversation didn't really continue into middle school and high school. It was more like there were some presentations that we had, like, they were units in, like, health class. The theme was that, like, drugs will ruin your life and, like, don't become an alcoholic. And, like, of course, those are, like, important things to know. But I feel like it wasn't until college, until I understood the importance of harm reduction and the fact that, yes, you're underage and you will encounter these things. We'd rather you be safe, so this is how you deal with it. The age difference really isn't that much between, like, 17 and 19. You just have more freedom of being away at school. So, yeah, I found that part really strange. It just, like, the dialogue kind of ended, and then we all went off to middle school. We went wild in everyone's different sort of way, I guess.
Yeah, if you could make a change to the program, what change do you think you would make?
Well, I think it would start with, like, my own personal experience of being, like, what drugs are acceptable in what context. Like, for example, Advil saying, like, yeah, if you have a headache, take an Advil, but don't take 60 Advil or you're going to die. Like, there are things that should be used in moderation, maybe. All these different things, like, ranging from okay to not okay. Maybe these some things that are not okay that they should know. Like, fentanyl, for example. Like, it's never okay. That's often a death sentence. But, for example, like, your mom getting a bottle of wine, like, and then it wasn't ever, like, okay that, like, your dad had a beer at dinner or your mom wanted to buy a bottle of wine for a celebration or whatever reason she wanted to have it for, like, as a fully grown adult. Like, when it's okay, when it's a little less okay, and when it's, like, not okay, I guess.
Yeah, that's actually really striking to hear that. I mean, that they were so extreme about it. And I think alcohol can be such a normal part of culture, too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask one more question. If you were a parent today, would you have your child go through DARE if it were your choice?
I feel like it'd be hard because, like, if everything was the same way it was, I wouldn't like it. But at the same time, I feel like they wouldn't really listen if I were the only person educating it. I think that if they had to go through it and it was in their school program, I would probably say yes, but then I would, like, continue the conversation at home and be like, listen, like, mommy can have a bottle of wine, like, that's okay, like, and she's gonna share it with dad or your older sister who's 21 or something like that, and, like, saying them when it's not okay. And of course you're 11 and you're still way too young to be experimenting with these sort of things, but when you feel inclined to do so, like, I feel like there should still be the same sort of sex talk people get going into middle school or however age, like, at beginning of adolescence, that there would be with drugs and alcohol, and the same sort of thing, like, we'd rather you be prepared than kind of encounter a situation that would be avoidable and also maybe be disastrous, you know. And I think I'd also have a conversation with the classroom teacher too about the conversation I'm having at home with the kid.
Yeah, well, it's been really nice having this interview, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your insight, Anya. What surprises me especially about DARE is its incredible amount of government money. I mean, people must have realized that it was ineffective. There were studies being conducted ever since the late 80s and 90s. Time and time again, DARE did not deliver the results it promised. I suppose people will believe what they want to believe. Let's change gears for a bit. Leave the DARE program to rest. We'll return to it later. You might be wondering at this point, what makes a drug prevention program effective? In answering this, let's turn to the scientific literature. One of the things that Anya brought up and that I wondered about myself is the time frame of DARE. Why provide drug education for elementary schoolers? Sure, this is not the only age group susceptible to using drugs. Researchers noted that longer programs are more effective than the shorter ones. Programs that lasted over a few years had the highest success rates. Longer programs reinforced substance prevention techniques and help youth at different life stages. As children age, they face unique developmental challenges. The teenage years are rampant with hormones, stress, and a lot of peer pressure. Using drugs might seem like an easy escape, but certainly not without consequences. That is why it is so important that youth are educated about drugs and taught to make informed decisions. Let us return to my earlier question. What are the key elements of a drug prevention program? Once again, I turn to the scientific literature. The next research I share comes to us from the Netherlands. Pim Kuipers, please excuse my pronunciation, and colleagues reviewed many studies in 2002. They looked at drug prevention studies with different modalities and assessed the effectiveness of each. The goal of the Netherlands team was to determine criteria that make up effective drug prevention programs. I will explain each criteria as they come up and elaborate when necessary. The first element of a successful drug prevention program is that its effects should be proven empirically. One of the great things about research is that it provides an objective framework to evaluate a treatment, or in this case, a drug prevention program. The next component of a drug prevention program is that it should be interactive. This criterion seems pretty self-explanatory. The more you get kids to engage in the process, the more information they will absorb. DARE did some interactive work, as we heard from Anya, but the majority of the curriculum was lecture-based. The most successful drug prevention programs also seem to target the social influence model of drug behavior. I don't believe we have mentioned what exactly this is. Let me explain. In short, the social influence model of drug behavior states that drug use is a learned behavior. People use drugs because drugs' behaviors are modeled to them.
certain environmental factors can lead a person to use drugs, like stress or peer pressure. The next criterion of an effective program is that it should focus on commitment not to use, norms, and intentions not to use. When working on educating youth about the dangers of drugs, there are many approaches you can take. Pim Kuipers and colleagues determined from their study that it is most beneficial to educate youth about social norms surrounding drug use and get them to commit to a substance-free lifestyle. Another component of a successful drug prevention program is community involvement. Because drug use is so often a social activity, it makes total sense to get as many people involved as possible. Peer leaders are also an important component of drug prevention programs. The DARE program used police officers as leaders. I can understand why they did this. I mean, you have to keep in mind that DARE was started by cops, and cops do have a lot of knowledge on substance use. But using peer leaders in the student body would probably have a longer lasting impression. After all, people's behavior is generally most influenced by their peers. Though cops have a greater scare tactic, it is a whole lot easier to relate to your peers. In times of difficulty, kids are much more likely to turn to each other than to a strange adult in a uniform. The final criteria is that a drug prevention program should teach life skills in addition to drug prevention. Drug use never occurs in a vacuum. People often turn to drugs when experiencing difficult times. By teaching youth healthy strategies of managing academic, family, and peer conflicts, they are less likely to turn to drugs.
Thanks, Lily. I'll take it from here. Hello, I'm Nathaniel Matos, and since we've already discussed DARE's past, I think it's about time we talk about their present. Earlier, Jonathan mentioned that in the late 90s and early 2000s, DARE began to lose funding as a result of public and political opinions finally beginning to align with the science. Well, this left DARE with two options: go under or change. They decided not to go soft lands that good night, and instead began a complete and total overhaul of their curriculum. They began running their own large-scale studies to test the effectiveness of a new program called Take Charge of Your Life. However, the unfortunate events of the September 11th terrorist attack and Hurricane Katrina caused interference with the study. Add that to the list of things 9/11 ruined. While the study eventually concluded that Take Charge of Your Life was ineffective, one notable outcome was that they found evidence that police officers were in fact well-suited for the role of delivering information about drugs, lending credence to the practice they had performed since inception. Fast-forwarding a few years, DARE selects a curriculum designed by drug prevention scientists. After a bit of tweaking, the new program, titled Keeping It Real, real is an acronym, by the way, was unveiled and implemented in middle schools in 2008, then into elementary schools in 2013, and finally into high schools in 2016. Keeping It Real marked a dramatic change in DARE's methodology. Rather than making students sit and listen to a 45-minute long lecture, the officer would only lecture for the beginning 8 to 10 minutes. Afterwards, the students would complete interactive assignments in small groups, such as role-playing and skits. The new curriculum emphasizes making smart decisions over an explicit teaching about the dangers of drugs and just saying no. Remember how I said REAL is an acronym? Well, it stands for the four ways officers teach saying no: refuse, explain, avoid, and leave. But there's more to it now. While not the core of what is being taught, Keeping It Real has successfully managed to reduce substance abuse in adolescents. In fact, Michelle Millerday, co-developer of Keeping It Real, told Scientific American, "It's not an anti-drug program. It's about things like being honest and safe and responsible." In the same article, the president and CEO of DARE America, Frank Pagueros, excuse my pronunciation, is quoted with what I consider the ethos of the new program. "If we teach good decision-making skills, it should transfer from one high-risk behavior to the next." This new program isn't just popular with the scientists, however. Accounts seem to suggest that students enjoy these lessons, and parents are happy that their kids are being taught how to be responsible and take care of themselves and avoid abusing potentially ruinous substances. It's a win-win. I, for one, am glad that DARE didn't go under. Sure, there are other programs that do the same thing or have the same intention, and many schools design their own curriculums rather than outsourcing this important education to third parties. But none of them have the same resources and connections that DARE has, especially at its height. DARE has a huge network of schools and police stations across the country, and even a bit of political clout. Although it still has to work off the bad reputation its old curriculum earned, I think that if they keep doing things correctly and following the science as it develops further, DARE should be able to make up for it soon enough. And that's the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed it, and learn something new today. Have a great day, stay safe, and I hope you dare to achieve your goals. See what I did there? It was a pun. Like, dare. It's the name of the program we talked about. You know, I swear, nobody appreciates any of the jokes I make.